Hi, everybody, and welcome to Bible Prophecy Radio. I'm your host, Albert Hardy. Today, we're in lockdown still, and what have we learned from COVID? What have we learned, and what are we to learn from the Bible during this time? Well, one of the things is the value of human life. When we're sequestered, locked up, we'll say, under house arrest in reality, what are we learning about our children and our spouse? Now, when my wife was with me, she's now in the nursing home, 18 years, in bed every day. You know, we have become estranged in one way and closer than we've ever been in another way. In other words, I call her and she calls me on the phone every single day, at least once, but I cannot go see her. I cannot touch her. They won't let me in the nursing home. And so, yeah, of course I miss her, but I can't help it and I can't do anything about it. I can't make it better. And that's something that I have to express to her from time to time. I can't make it better. I'm sorry. She's paralyzed. She's blind, or mostly blind. But she can still talk on the phone. And she has trouble with some of her words and some of her understanding of words. She can't find the remote to change the channel on the TV, and yet she can figure out what's going on just by listening. And some of it is no good. Well, anyway, that's enough of that, I guess. But yes, we have come to be more precious with our loved ones during this lockdown. So there is always something to be thankful for. With every curse, there's also a blessing. So we should thank our God for what we are learning. I heard a story about people, and you know, the way it was is not the way it is now. The way it was 3 months ago, the people in the cities actually disdained their own children like they were a pain in the neck. And what would we do if we ever had to be together all day, every day? And they dreaded that. They hated the thought of that. Man, I couldn't stand my kids, they would say. But in reality, now we see the value of our children, even in the city. When my grandchildren come here, it's like going to the farm. I live in the city. It's in the city limits. But it's like a farm. You know, I've seldom, if ever, mowed my backyard. Why? Well, because it's a forest. There are trees everywhere back there, and grass won't grow. There's nothing to mow. But I love my yard, my lot. It's an 80 by 150 lot, but the back half is woods mostly, and my gardens. So anyway, it's like coming to the farm to them. But they're cityfied. They all live in Tampa. I miss them. I love them very dearly. In fact, probably more dearly now than ever, even though I haven't seen them in quite some time. They're growing up without their grandpa. Well, they're not growing up without mom and dad, thankfully. So, and now they're together all the time, 24/7. And what are they learning? the value of each other. That's a good lesson we all should need to learn. Today I want to go to Daniel chapter 8 and see if we can get pretty much through with this. I'll try to skip around a little bit so that we don't eat up all our time with that one chapter. It's about Daniel's vision of a ram and a goat. To me, the ram is Iran. That sort of makes a rhyme. The ram is Iran. And the goat, that would be Turkey. So here's what it says, starting in verse 1. During the third year of King Belshazzar's reign, I, Daniel, saw another vision, following the one that had already appeared to me. In this vision, I was at the fortress of Susa in the province of Elam, standing beside the Ulai River. As I looked up, I saw a ram with two long horns standing beside the river. One of the horns was longer than the other one, even though it had grown later than the other one. The ram butted everything out of his way to the west and to the north and to the south, and no one could stand against him or help his victims. He did as he pleased and became very great. While I was watching, suddenly a male goat appeared from the west and crossing the land so swiftly that he didn't even touch the ground. Now, I wonder if that could be because he used aircraft to get around. This goat, which had one very large horn between its eyes, headed toward the two-horned ram that I had seen standing beside the river, rushing at him in a rage. The goat charged him furiously. At the ram, he struck him, breaking off both of his horns. Now the ram was helpless, and the goat knocked him down and trampled him. No one could rescue the ram from the goat's power. The goat became very powerful, but at the height of his power, the large horn was broken off. In the large horn's place grew four prominent horns pointing to the four directions of the earth. That would be north, south, east, and west. Then, from one of the prominent horns came a small horn whose power grew very great. It extended toward the south and toward the east and toward the glorious land of Israel. Its power reached to the heavens, where it attacked the heavenly army, throwing some of the heavenly beings and some of the stars to the ground and trampling them. It even challenged the commander of heaven's army. Now that would be Jesus, by canceling the daily sacrifices offered to him and by destroying his temple. Well, that temple doesn't really exist anymore, and they've got everything ready to build, but no place. They don't know where to build it just yet. We'll see what happens. The army of heaven was restrained from responding to this rebellion. So daily sacrifices were halted and truth was being overthrown. The horn succeeded in everything it did. And then I heard two holy ones talking to each other. One of them asked, "How long will the events of this vision last? How long will the rebellion that causes desecration stop the sacrifices that are going on daily? How long will the temple and heaven's army be trampled on?" The other replied, "It will take 2,300 evenings and mornings, and then the temple will be made right again. Then Gabriel explains the vision, starting in verse 15, Daniel 8. As I, Daniel, was trying to understand the meaning of this vision, someone who looked like a man stood in front of me, and I heard a human voice calling out from the Ulai River, Gabriel, tell this man the meaning of this vision. As Gabriel approached the place where I was standing, I became so terrified that I fell with my face to the ground. Son of man, he said, you must understand that the events you have seen in your vision relate to the time of the end. So this cannot be Alexander the Great in any way, shape, or form, because he's not around anymore. And besides that, he was the fourth Alexander, not the first one. So a lot of teachers seem to think that this is talking about Europe and Alexander, but no. Besides, Alexander was a Greek. Son of man, he said, you must understand that the events you have seen in your vision relate to the time of the end. So that's pretty close to where we are right now, if you ask me. While he was speaking, I fainted, and I lay there with my face to the ground. But Gabriel roused me with a touch and helped me to my feet. Then he said, I'm here to tell you what will happen later in the time of wrath. And that's where we're at right now, or at least we're beginning to get there. What you have seen pertains to the very end of time. The two-horned ram represents the kings of Media and Persia. Today we call it Iran. So the ram is Iran. The shaggy male goat represents the king of Greece. Now, let me just tell you that the king of Greece is probably the king of Turkey, not the king of Greece today. Today, Greece, the Grecian Empire, the Greco-Roman Empire, if you will, is much, much smaller, reduced to a bunch of islands, and not covering all of Asia Minor like it did in these days. Asia Minor is what we call Turkey today. To continue, and the large horn between his eyes represents the first king of the Greek Empire. The four prominent horns that replaced the large horn show that the Greek Empire will break into four kingdoms, but none as great as the first. At the end of their rule, their sin is at its height. A fierce king, a master of intrigue, will rise to power. He will become very strong, but not by his own power. He will cause a shocking amount of destruction and succeed in everything he does. He will destroy powerful leaders and devastate the holy people, that's the Jews. He will be a master of deception and will become arrogant. He will destroy many without warning. He will even take on the prince of princes in battle, but he will be broken, though not by human power. That is speaking of Jesus. The Prince of Princes is Jesus, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Prince of Peace. Verse 26, this vision of the 2300 evenings and mornings is true, but none of these things will happen for a long time. So in other words, it's way into the future. So keep this vision a secret. Then I, Daniel, was overcome and lay sick for several days. Afterward, I got up and performed my duties for the king, but I was greatly troubled by the vision and could not understand it. Unquote. That's the end of chapter 8. So now let's go to Revelation chapter 6. And I want to read that to you as well. Revelation 6. I think you will probably notice several matches or scriptures that are very similar to Matthew 24 in this one. As I watched, the Lamb broke the first of the seven seals of the scroll. Then I heard one of the four living beings say with a voice like thunder, "Come!" I looked up and I saw a white horse standing there. Its rider carried a bow and a crown. Now, a lot of people think that's Jesus. I'm saying, no, it's a fake Jesus, not the real Jesus. Didn't even mention that he had any arrows. But a crown was placed on his head. He rode out to win many battles and gain the victory. When the Lamb broke the second seal, I heard a second living being say, "Come." See, it doesn't make sense that if the Lord is the one riding on the white horse, that the Lamb would be talking about it. It's not him. It's not him. I heard a second living being say, "Come." Then another horse appeared, a red one. Its rider was given a mighty sword and the authority to take peace from the earth. It seems like that's starting to happen now. We've got riots all over the place, and not just in the United States either. It's all over the place. And there was war and slaughter everywhere. When the Lamb broke the third seal, I heard the third living being say, "Come." I looked up and I saw a black horse, and its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice from among the four beings say, "A loaf of wheat bread or three loaves of barley will cost a day's pay, and don't waste the olive oil and wine." So it seems like agriculture will really become important because of people's starvation or lack of having any of it. So that's why it becomes precious. Verse 7, when the Lamb broke the fourth seal, I heard the fourth living being say, "Come." So I looked up and I saw a horse whose color was pale green. Ew. And its rider was named Death, and his companion was the grave. These two were given authority over one-fourth of the earth to kill with the sword, with famine, and with disease, and wild animals. That sounds pretty close to where we're getting now. These killing with a sword, he's causing famine. We are having shortages right now. If you go to the grocery store and look for certain canned goods, they're missing, or there's limits to them. Like if I go to Aldi's, there's a limit of four. Several weeks ago, it was a limit of eight. Now they're down to four. You can only buy four at a time. Verse 9, when the Lamb broke the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls or lives of all who had been martyred for the word of God and for being faithful to their testimony. In other words, to the testimony of the word of God. They shouted to the Lord, saying, "O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you judge the people who belong to this world, and avenge our blood for what they've done to us?" Then a white robe was given to each of them, and they were told to rest for a little while longer until the full number of their brothers and sisters, their fellow servants of Jesus, who were to be martyred, had joined them. I watched as the Lamb broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake. And the sun became as dark as black cloth, and the moon became as red as blood. That's a parallel between Matthew 24 and Isaiah 13, which maybe we'll have time to briefly touch on. Then the stars of the sky fell to the earth like green figs falling from a tree shaken by a strong wind. This guy was rolled up like a scroll. Now, this is Isaiah 34 right here, verse 9 in particular. The sky was rolled up like a scroll, and all the mountains and islands were moved from their places. Islands will be submerged. We've talked about that before in other podcasts. Then everyone, the kings of the earth, the rulers, the generals, the wealthy, the powerful, and every slave and free person, all hid themselves in caves and among the rocks in the mountains. And they cried to the mountains and rocks, "Fall on us and hide us from the face of the one who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb." Have you ever seen a wrathful lamb? No. But Jesus is lion and lamb. We certainly hear about a lion not turning to left or right from anybody. No, they're tough and they're mean. "For the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to survive?" And that's the end of chapter 6 of Revelation. Here's a question for you that we'll answer. Where is Babylon today? Well, Babylon today is reduced down to one city, and it's about 50 miles south of Baghdad in Iraq. But here's what Isaiah chapter 13 says. Isaiah the son of Amoz received this message concerning the destruction of Babylon. Now, keep in mind that Iraq is a valley. There's a mountain range between Iran and Iraq, and there's another mountain range between them and Saudi Arabia. So we're in this valley, and this valley has the Euphrates and the Tigris River run through there. But he says, "Raise a signal flag on a bare hilltop and call up an army against Babylon. Wave your hand to encourage them as they march into the palaces of the high and mighty. I, the Lord, have dedicated these soldiers for this task. Yes, I've called mighty warriors to express my anger, and they will rejoice when I am exalted." I want to drop down to verse 9. Chapter 13 of Isaiah. "For see, the day of the Lord is coming, a terrible day of his fury and fierce anger. The land will be made desolate, and all the sinners destroyed with it." You hear that? All the sinners destroyed with it? Who's he talking about? He's talking about Islam. The people that live there to this day are Islamic peoples. The Kurds live there too. See, we've got two factions, at least two different factions within Islam. We've got the Sunnis to the west and the Shiites in Iran. The Shiites are fundamentalist Islam. They are getting more and more restrictive and strict on their people. And I believe they will continue to do that. And then on the other side, the Sunnis, they're becoming more and more liberal, more and more lax. Do you know that women can actually drive now there? To continue, verse 10, "The heavens will be black above them, and the stars will give no light." This is just what we just saw in Revelation 6. "The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will provide no light." Matthew 24:29. And we'll try to go there in a second. "I, the Lord, will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their sin. I will crush the arrogance of the proud and humble the pride of the mighty." We have a lot of mighty and proud people out there right now, breaking glass and destroying things, causing fires and just terrible, awful vandalism, and we're allowing that. "I will make people scarcer than gold." Wow, more rare than the fine gold of Ophir. You talk about us valuing people and our own people. What happens if half of them are dead? We've got to be careful, and our people, our children, are precious. Verse 13, "For I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move from its place when the Lord of heaven's armies displays his wrath in the day of his fierce anger. Everyone in Babylon will run about like a hunted gazelle, like sheep without a shepherd. They will try to find their own people and flee to their own land. Anyone who is captured will be cut down, run through with a sword." Dropping down for sake of time to verse 19, "Babylon, the most glorious of kingdoms, the flower of the Chaldean pride, will be devastated like Sodom and Gomorrah when God destroyed them. There's nothing left but ash." And it's still there to this day, by the way. Be careful, don't pull too much of it down on you, or you'll get covered up with it. "Babylon will never be inhabited again," verse 20. "It will remain empty for generation after generation." So now let's flip on over to Matthew 24. I want to point out something you may never have seen before. Matthew 24, dropping down to verse 4, Jesus told them, "Don't let anyone mislead you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah. They will deceive many, and you will hear of wars and threats of wars, but don't panic. Yes, these things must take place, but the end won't follow immediately. Nation will go to war against nation, and kingdom against kingdom." Let's stop right there. This word nation is translated from ethos, E-T-H-O-S in Greek. What does that mean? Ethnic groups. Race. Race will go to war against race, and kingdom or government against government. There will be famines and earthquakes in many parts of the world. This is what's starting to happen now. We're experiencing some food shortage right now, today. But all this is only the first of the birth pains, with more to come. Verse 9, "Then you will be raptured away." No. That's not what it says. It says, "You will be arrested, persecuted, and killed." We don't want to hear that. We want to be hearing that we're going to be raptured out of this mess. "You will be hated all over the world because you are my followers. And as a result, many will turn away from me and betray and hate each other." I believe we're there. Dropping down to verse 21, "For there will be greater anguish than at any time since the world began, and it will never be so great again. In fact, unless that time of calamity is shortened, not a single person will survive." That's verse 22. "But it will be shortened for the sake of God's chosen ones." Well, this is Albert Hardy for Bible Prophecy Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Value your children. Value one another. Value each other. Value your spouse and your parents. Love them now. Tomorrow, you may not have that opportunity. At any rate, you can go to my website, itellwhy.com, or jesusiswhy.com. It'll both lead you to the same place. I have no advertising there. I'm not after your money. I'm not after your email address or anything. I want to serve the public and serve my Creator. I hope you do the same. So until next time, I'm Albert Hardy for Bible Prophecy Radio.